Welcome, goblins and ghouls, to another episode of Venture Maidens. Thank you so much for being here and continuing to support our show. Before I get to the recap, I want to take a moment to shout out my latest publication, Puzzle Master. I have just released a puzzle supplement on the DM's Guild called Puzzle Master, which is a collection of 10 level-agnostic puzzles perfect to drop into any D&D game. Every puzzle is accompanied by beautiful handcrafted handouts made by the wickedly talented Stacey Allen, and perfect to print out for an in-person game or use on a virtual tabletop. In addition to the 10 puzzles, Puzzle Master also has an escape room-style dungeon, which allows you to combine all the puzzles into a truly unique dungeon delving experience. I am really proud of this project, which we designed to have an old-school art feel and a desperately fun atmosphere, like you would find in Ye Olde Highlights magazine or other puzzle books of our youths. So please, upgrade your DM arsenal and head to dmsguild.com to grab your copy of Puzzle Master today. Alright, now I'm going to give you a quick recap of what happened last time, then play you an ad for another great DSBN show to check out. Total Party Thrill. Alright, last time on Venture Maidens, our maidens led the wooden denizens of Toytown to storm Jack's castle. After surviving a pelting via beach ball, our heroes managed to enter the fortress, fighting off marbles and wind-up toys in the process. They came face to face with Jack, a bitter toy who has cut himself free from the constraints of his box. The maidens learned Jack had abducted the keeper to find a way to escape the prison of the gate. After escorting both Jack and the keeper back to Toytown, the party discovered the key back into the maze, and as they teleported away, Jack was left behind, betrayed by the maiden's promise to free him. Shell-shocked from the experience, our heroes made their way to the final gate. And that's what happened! All right, now let's play that ad and then get to the show.
Hey there, listeners. It's Shane.
And Ishan, your hosts from the Total Party Thrill podcast, the newest addition to the Don't Split the Podcast Network.
We talk topics that help you, dear listener, create and play better RPG games.
We have a back catalog of more than 150 weekly episodes.
And we got nominated for an Emmy for episode 11, Social Contracts.
In episode 154, we talked about crossing the moral event horizon. How evil is too evil?
We also recap our home games, like the 40k Rogue Trader campaign, Dynasty Unwarranted.
But that's mainly just you trying to kill us all. In your defense, our characters are greedy idiots.
Don't forget the 3 years we spent in Eberron playing Morning Glory, your 5th edition D&D campaign.
We also review new RPGs and books, and every episode we build a 5th edition D&D character in the Character Creation Forge.
You might check out the Pint-Sized Punisher from episode 119, a halfling with a bad attitude, and 14 levels of barbarian.
So to recap, Total Party Thrill. RPG advice, campaign recaps, and D&D characters built by your dashing hosts every single week.
What more could you possibly want?
To get back to the actual show?
Oh yeah, let me just hit this button, and here you go.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Our maidens step through the final gate, only to discover an arcane workshop. Will these animated objects get the best of our heroes? What tricky secrets does the magic anvil hide? Can they find the final chess piece needed to escape? Find out in episode 92, Forge Ahead.
We are now live. Everybody can see us. Hello, everybody. We're clenched and ready to go. welcome, everybody, to the Venture Maidens podcast. Look, everybody can hear us. All the mics are going right. Huzzah! Hey, everybody. Wow, I'm super happy to be here. I'm super happy you're here at our brand new 7 p.m. start time, 7 p.m. Pacific start time. I'm excited to get into it. So, hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Conowich, and I'm going to be your Dungeon Master.
I'm Brittany, and I'm going to be Arnadel Bill, the Moon Elf Warlock.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Farivalen, the Tiefling Sorceress. Hi, everyone. I'm Nassim Etemad, and I'm playing your human monk, Sayonor, trying to save a cup from being knocked over by my cat right now.
Oh, no. Cute problems.
Zora, stop being cute and annoying.
And I'm Sage, and I'm your clenched cleric, Kara Brynhilda.
I told all of the maidens to have their butts clenched for this episode, so you know it's gonna be a wild time, everybody. So welcome! Wow! So we have a lot of stuff to do. Some pretty wild stuff is happening in Venture Maidens. So that is where we are diving in today. You had concluded the events of that gate, where you had encountered all of these wooden beings, these toys, and you had wormed your way through after, you know, working with Jack and then sort of betraying Jack to get this keeper and getting teleported back out of the maze. But you had been successful. This keeper, in fact, had turned out to be another one of these chess pieces that you have been collecting this whole time. So that keeper there was the Black Bishop, which you now have in your possession, the Black Bishop, and then you also have the White King. And you know that somewhere else in this maze, an individual by the name of Chess is collecting the rest of these pieces. And presumably, once you're all done, you're going to meet in the middle and everything will be great. So after you had left that gate, you had come to the next one, this final gate that you had agreed to go in while Chess is taking care of the rest of these gates here. And this final gate before you, I think we had ended right as you were like about to step into this gate. So as you look at it, it's the same as all the other ones, the same kind of stone, rough-hewn construction. And the icon above it is this hammer with this anvil shape below it. So that's all you've got. And by way of a clue, and this gate stands open and waiting.
Let's go on in.
Let's get into it. All right, everybody stepping through?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as you step through this gate, that feeling of just part of you being sort of dissolved and then reformed, stepping through mist as you come into a very different place. And as you do so, immediately you realize wherever you are, it's dark. And it takes you a while, you know, to adjust as your dark vision, you know, comes into play and you start to, you know, get a hint of your surroundings. And probably the next thing that hits you is the smell of this room. It's a very musty, dusty sort of smell. It's very peculiar. It smells like if you've ever been somewhere where there's like a lot of stuff, or maybe like a storehouse, that kind of wafting scent hits you as you look around this room here. And there's no light in this room, so you can just see all of these piles and piles of objects around you. And as you kind of note what they are, the sour note to the smell hits you. As you see, you're just in this big room that's filled with shoes. Just shoes in these piles and piles all around you, piled up against the walls in these kind of like towers that are about to topple over, just everywhere. You're standing on top of them. They're just all around you. So it's the scent of the leather and foot smell and just very odd as you land on this pile.
Ooh.
I mean,
that's
they're
right.
Just used shoes.
Mm-hmm. Just no sort of order or theme that you can tell. It's just shoes that have been piled up.
I do not like the image that this is putting into my head.
At first, I was real excited. And I was like, ooh, are any of them cute? But that quickly went away.
No,
they are certainly used from the smell.
Yeah, how high is this pile?
Pretty big. So, I mean, this room here is maybe like a 15 by 15 foot like cube room, and you cannot see the floor. You are sitting like on one of these kind of lower piles that, you know, you've scattered on, but in some places, like in the corners of the room, shoes have been precariously stacked up to like almost the ceiling point. But of course, as you move and shift, some of the shoes just fall and move around. It's just a total mess of shoes in this room.
Is there any like doors or anything out of it?
Not that you can see, but there are quite a bit of shoes, so you have a suspicion maybe if you dig, you could probably find a door.
Oh, God. Wait, is shoes piled on top of a door?
It's just the room is so, it's like a ball pit of shoes in this room. So So as you're looking around, you can see the ceiling and you see the very tops of the walls, but the rest of it is shoes all over the place.
Kara's going to take out her shield and she's going to start basically use it as like a shovel to like shove them aside.
Yeah, and you can, you know, you start going towards the walls, and when wall doesn't look promising, you know, you head towards the others and you manage to form a pile, carving out of the way until you do find a stone door against one wall. It's just a very simple door that, it's clearly whoever closed it on the other side had to, like, press against the shoes and then shove it closed from the other side.
Oh, I found a door over here. Quick, help me dig through this pile and see if we can find a handle or shove it open or something.
Yeah.
All right. And you all do, again, that just smell wafting out, because there are no windows in this room, so it's just closet smell as you manage to...
Kicked up, if you will.
Yeah. As you kicked... Oh, how dare you. We're already starting... Great. So you manage to make a little alcove, you know, holding back the shoes just in time that you can shove the door open. And yeah, it just seems to be a normal door. It's not locked or anything. And as you do pull it open, you can tell that there is a hallway beyond this space. But like this room, there are no lights coming from the hallway. So all you can kind of see is a stone wall just when the crack is open.
All right.
Let's get out of the stank, I guess.
Before we leave, I just want to take note with maybe, like, investigation or person. I don't know. I just want to know, are they different sizes? Is it all the same size? Material? Like, I maybe get a read on, like, are they collect? Whoever has this collection of shoes, is it, like, the same kind of collection? Like, one type of thing that they're collecting from?
Yeah, I think just cursory glance around the room, you can tell. I mean, these are shoes of all kind of stripes and varieties, shoes of different sizes, shoes that, you know, wouldn't particularly belong to, like, gendered fashions. So, you know, there's men's boots over there with, like, a lady's slipper that's mixed in with, like, you know, big socks that are sort of like shoes, all kinds of different things from all different cultures and styles and materials.
Any magical shoes?
I think, Arnidal, if you're looking around the room, there are no magical shoes in this pile. Just with your magic eyes, real quick, you can tell. Yeah.
So, into this hallway, we don't see much light but a crack at the end of it.
Oh, so, like, you open up the door crack and you can just see the stone walls of hallway beyond, but if you want to push... Oh. Out, you certainly can.
Yeah, let's bust through. Let's get out of here.
You do. You and some shoes manage to, like, shove yourselves out of the room. And again, you can close that door, you know, sealing the force of all of these shoes now that you aren't there to hold it back. And you find yourself standing in this hallway that stretches on for a great amount of distance on either side. So far that beyond your range of vision, very comfortably this hallway continues. And this hallway is just lined with identical doors. Completely identical to the door that you just shut. Just door after door after door in this eternity of hallway.
Let's open one up. First one to the right.
What's behind door number one?
So you go ahead and you open up the door immediately to the right. And as you do, you hear clattering of metal. And as you open it up, just pots fall towards you onto the floor with just this huge amount of clattering noise, as just saucepans and pots and skillets of all varieties just pour out of this room and kind of settle around your feet.
We've got a hoarder on our hands.
I love that puppet show.
Ah, the hoarder puppet.
All right.
I just want to, like, can we just go down and, like, open the next, you know, five doors one by one?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so you keep on moving and, you know, opening up these doors, and one, like, all of these rubber bouncy balls come out. You open up another one.
Fun. It's like, oh my god.
It's like all gloves. You open up another one and it's just like all porcelain objects. So like bathtubs and like tiles and things spill out. And it seems that each of these doors that you open has some different specific kind of item or material. Yes.
Brittany, with your hand finger raised.
Really important question. I'm going to think back to the shoes and what I glanced, and then the ensuing objects that were. Have they been used?
It does look like all of these objects have been used. So nothing is. Well, some are. Damn. Some are new. It's more like thrift store finds, you know, where every once in a while there is like one brand new thing in the midst of a bunch, but all still lightly used.
My hypothesis was that the thing that we're facing a maker of some kind, since it was a anvil, like a the icon was like a hammer and anvil looking thing, like smithing. I was like, oh shit, this is like a maker situation. But then if they've all been used, they've been a myriad of different levels of use. I'm like, okay, well,
I feel like
this is more of a collection. I feel
like this is where all the stuff goes when you lose it. And, like, you lose your left sock, this is where it ends up.
Ew.
That's my guess.
It's like that guy in Halloween Town. What was his name? There was a character in that movie that was his existence. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, and so you all are kind of, you know, you open up a bunch of doors and you're starting to get the theme of what's happening here. Why don't you all go ahead and make some perception checks for me while this is happening?
11.
Ooh.
Take 26. My 12, 11.
Okay. So then it's Kara and Arnadel who noticed this. Maybe Saye and Farah, you know, are opening up yet another room and, you know, a bunch of tea cozies fall out. when Kara and Arnadel, you pick up a very quiet, very muffled sound coming from one end of the hallway. And I think you turn just in time to see maybe like 40 doors down from where you are. This gargantuan form is moving down through this hallway here. And you couldn't hear them until this moment because their body is, it's vaguely humanoid shaped and very stooped to fit in this hallway, but it seems to be entirely made out of fabric. And there's all of these patchwork fabrics that form sort of this doll-like shape. And as this thing moves and scrapes across the floor, you can see, you know, trails of yarn are pulling behind it as like its head is this like ball of linen that's been kind of like rubber banded to make this head shape. And it's shuffling down this hallway here and coming right for you all.
In an aggressive way or just
like it's hard
like
to tell, because it doesn't have a face per se. It's this thing that's just made out of all of these different scraps of cloth. But it is moving quite ferociously, I guess, because it's, it's hunched over. So it's this very horrifying, like, thing that's dragging, you know, its hands along the floor here, as you can see these, like, twine and thread coming towards you, pulling itself down this very small hallway.
I'm going to grab Kara's arm and just look at her and be like,
she pulls out her axe and has fixes her shield up on her arm and goes, well, it's either gonna talk to us or it's gonna hit us, and I'm fine with either.
Okay, we'll wait for it to talk, and you're obviously waiting for it to hit. I turn around and look at Saya and Farah, and just like, hey guys.
Hey.
Up ahead.
So I'll say this hallway is about 10 feet wide, so maybe two of you could stand on one side. So who are the two in front? And who are the two behind? Or is it just Kara in the front?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I assume if they saw it, we'll be in the back.
Yeah, once they point it out, you can, like, whoop, and you can get eyes on this horrifying thing moving towards you. All right, very cool. Let's roll some initiative.
Ooh, okay, so it's going to hit. 18.
24.
That's going to be a 7.
8.
Wow, guys! Glad you're in the front. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's a beneficial, so we can see what the fuck sure. This thing wants. Maybe. Since we did just roll for initiative, you know, who knows?
So this creation, this fabric monstrosity, is now that it sees that you see it, starts to move at an alarming speed as it is coming and sweeping its way down the hallway immediately towards you. So it is running full charge towards both Kara and Arnadel as it is approaching here. And Saye, from the back position here, you actually have the first move.
Okay, I want to try something first just to see if it'll work. I will move ahead of them a good at least 15 feet. And I don't know at that point what its distance is to me, but I want to literally take the shirt off my back and like fold it up nice and neatly. And as like a diplomatic gesture, like offer it to this pile of stuff. See if it's interested in collecting things for some safety or some passage. And yeah, I will literally fold it up and gesture the shirt towards the creature.
Sure. So you hold out this shirt from your back towards this thing, and this monstrosity continues to rocket towards you. And just as it gets, like, large right in front of you, looming, you can feel the flaps of fabric and the winds that they're creating, almost like a sail. It reaches down its mouth and it kind of splits open with this terror and bites down on your hands that are holding the shirt here, and with a sudden motion pulls its head backwards. And you haven't experienced any pain at all, but this thing starts going as it unravels the threads of your shirt, and you see little pieces of like the orange shirt that you had incorporate into its body, and it lets out a kind of sound, and then it sort of freezes and looks at you.
Oh,
this is hungry.
You've solved my golem.
Oh God, there isn't a diplomacy thing.
Persuasion.
Yeah, I'll just say, I hope you enjoyed that. We'd happily give you any more other tokens for safety as we try to navigate our way through these halls and doors. We just want to find our way out. We do not wish to hurt you.
All right.
We are seeking a keeper.
Yeah, what kind of check would you like to use to... I would accept animal handling. I would accept persuasion.
I mean, I guess we'll do animal handling. I got better numbers.
All right, let's do it.
23.
Oh, yeah. So you're, you know, making gestures, because you're also not sure if this thing speaks so far. So you're making kind of friendly gestures you would at maybe like a very smart dog. Mm-hmm. And this thing sort of like, you see as it's listening to you, like little balls of yarn kind of come up to where it surfaces, and like the little threads sort of spin around like in the air, maybe almost like antenna as it's, you know, kind of listening to you. And it does like kind of shrink down to one size and looks around at your companions and sort of makes a like a rustling gesture that seems sort of inquisitory.
Does it?
I will turn back to my companions and say, maybe offer it something and also imply you'd like to just move peacefully through here.
Who has one of the, like, chess pieces? Who's carrying those?
I think Saye was the one carrying. Yeah, the...
Hey, okay, I, like, pull out of my bag, like, I don't know, some fucking... A pair of socks or something that I have. So I'm going to pull... And, like, nice wool ones. That's they're, nice. Like, it's all valid quality.
Yeah, so it reaches over and its head, you know, burbles up and opens up, like, the seams of a burlap sack and once again, like, closes around your arms and kind of... And...
I'm holding it like a treat, you know, like above its reach, and I'm like, give me have one of those pieces.
And it, you have no idea what it's doing, but it manages to like warp its form very quickly and grab it, because this thing seems to be able to transform as it is using like the components, you know, the pieces of clothing, the pieces of fabric, the scraps to alter and shape its form to be bigger, larger, have tendrils, tails, whatever it is, as it consumes your...
It's like the shambling sort out of fabric. Yeah. So I'm basically trying to encourage it to, like, this.
Oh, so you're holding up the
with
piece?
The, like, yeah, like, I'm trying to, like, get its attention with the fine elven socks that I have. I'm not particularly keen on parting with them, but, you know, desperate times. And I'm going to have that chess piece. I'm like, this is what we're looking for. Like, here you go as a treat. Like,
all right. Make me a check here. I like it. Maybe animal handling. I'll give you with advantage because I think this is pretty good. This is pretty good stuff.
Dog training. Arnadel's yeah, dog 101. Training. 101. My lips hurt too. It's been so dry here. I mean, it's a natural 20. Do you want me to add my modifier?
So you're doing that, and you know, it kind of like snaps at the socks, and you're like, ah, you pull them away, and you know, give the thing. And you see it, this creature, it pauses, and then some of those yarn tendrils come out, almost like sensors, and they very delicately like wrap around the chest piece and kind of like, it's almost like a buffing movement it's doing. And then, you know, the yarn retracts into its form again. And this thing kind of, it does like an up and down, where it becomes like a thin column and then a wide pile and a thin column.
Dope.
And then opens up its burlap mouth.
I give it one of the socks. And I'm like, can you show us the way? Also, Alistair Fitzpatrick, I feel like he's a very well-trained mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
baby.
For sure. I think he's sitting on your head watching very suspiciously of this other creature.
Yeah, like, I'm just treating this thing like my mm-hmm. pseudo-dragon. I'm just yeah. like, look.
I think Alistair is one of those pets who's, like, okay with other pets, but it takes some time, you know? Like, they're feeling each other out, so Alistair's on your shoulder, like, Whereas this pile of clothes is totally ignoring Alistair. But it gobbles up one of the socks, and you see, you know, it gets incorporated into its form along with, you know, the orange threads of Saya's shirt. And then it makes, like, this very quick movement heading back down the hallway from the way it came, and then it kind of pauses and stops and looks back at you all.
It wants us to follow!
Let's go!
Arnadel's just fucking so excited right now. Like, let's go, guys!
This place is already 10 times better than the other place.
I was like, this is going so much better!
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I am so happy to follow a moving laundry pile down a hall of
laundry puppy.
Like, so down in.
Laundry puppy.
It's a laundry puppy.
New monster. So
does it make noise?
I mean, very it little. Like, it's like if cloth is scraping against stone. So it's a very light amount of noise that this thing makes. As it yeah, as it does take off, and once again, it is running. You can't really tell. It doesn't have legs.
Flourishing,
yeah, slithering. Clapping. I don't know. Against this hallway, you know, letting the air like breeze through its sails once again as it puts them out. And every once in a while, it'll stop and wait for you to catch up as you keep just rocketing down this hallway here. And then once again, this creature stops and it starts to do that thing again where it goes really tall and then condenses into a pile and goes really tall. And you all begin to hear a big clanking sound coming from behind one of the doors that bursts open. And you see this equally large creature starts to come out of it and pool into this hallway here. And you can see that its body is formed of all of these dented pieces of metal that I think maybe Kara, even though these forms are twisted and like broken and messed up, you can tell that these are the remains of shields that form the body of this thing as it like condenses out of this doorway and lumbers into this hallway and stands up, and it like beats against its chest with this very, very loud clanging sound as it considers you all.
She is going to beat her axe against her shield, mimicking the way that, like, the pattern that it did.
And as the creature does, you know, you see the plates of its skin, which are made of these broken indented shards of shield, sort of like go still for a moment, and then this thing stands up really tall, and then it bangs once again on its chest, twice this time.
And she'll bang three times.
And as you do so, you see all the shields like kind of shudder and like, you know, get really small. And then it kind of like scoots back into the hallway, and this little fabric beast you've been following does the like stand up really tall and then go really small sort of thing and shuffles into this door that this broken shield golem just came out of.
Yeah.
You show that one who's boss.
I'm louder.
I make metal noise too.
Twice as big. So you move and you follow this creature now into this doorway. And this room, unlike all the others, isn't piled with stuff. This looks like a pretty open entryway, but it is still made of sort of that grayish stone. And you do see a set of double doors on the far side. And these double doors are much nicer than all of the standard doors that you've kind of seen before. You also do see that in one corner of this room is a carved circle on the floor, and you can see all of these different sigils surrounding it here.
Do I recognize any of them?
Ooh, yes. Why don't you both, Arnadel and Farah, give me Arcana checks? Or Farah, if you wanted to do religion check, and Arnadel Arcana, whatever works.
Sure.
I got an 18 plus 8, so a 26.
Hot girl.
I got a 23 on religion.
Okay, so between the two of you, I think you can learn everything there is to learn about these sigils.
Go smarty pants.
Woo! You can both recognize that this is some kind of, like, summoning circle that has been carved into this floor, very similar to, like, a teleportation circle, except this is clearly not active or only activated by a special key or something, but you have no way to open it, unfortunately. You can also tell that the sigils around here, Arnadel, it's very similar to like when you saw the first gate and you saw the sigil that it had for Earth, where it was like this very, very old symbol for the elements. All of these sigils here are extremely old, like out of fashion runes that you would use in spell casting. You know, they're the ones that use like 15 lines to draw a rune instead of like the modern 4 rune style. So, and it is, again, all for teleportation, that sort of thing, as you were looking at it. So you two can very quickly piece together that's what this is.
I want to look at Farah and be like, what are you willing to wager this is our way out?
I look at, she looks in her pockets.
I mean, theoretically, I mean, we could just, like, bet chips.
No,
just,
no, no. You know, I would love to make some money today. She's
oh, I don't have any money. I had to borrow some to get this.
Arnadel
staff.
Is the most broke.
I'm the most broke. It was rhetorical. I just like right, like this is a teleport. I'm looking at this as a teleportation.
Yeah, I was kidding. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks definitely like it could be for sure our way out of here.
I will also say you both rolled really well. So I think you would also pick up amongst these runes is like a reduce spell. So something that would alter whoever came through this portal.
Okay.
Which is a weird thing to see on a teleportation circle.
Why are they gonna be tiny when they go through?
Wait a second. Oh my god. Okay.
Shit.
I turn to the group and I'm like, I love reading fairy tales. I have a feeling, you know, that whole needle in a haystack thought? Just a crazy thought. You guys back me up on this or tell me to shut the heck up. Do you feel like... Okay, so I'm going to communicate with Farah and to reduce what you just explained to us and what we've figured out by looking at this. I'm like, okay, so reduction spell here. Teleportation pad. What if we have to find the dang pawn in all of the piles? We have to figure out which pile that's in. Am I crazy? Am I like getting too far ahead of myself?
My other thought is... I gotta imagine Manitios, very big. This could be also where they make everything in this maze, but I don't know.
What if the pawns are, or what if all the chess pieces are really giant, and then they get shrunk down and put into a world? I don't know, there could be a lot of different things happening here.
I feel like there's a lot. I just hope that we don't have to find that chess piece as a needle in a haystack metaphor with all the piles of crap that we have to sift through in the other rooms. How many rooms did we pass?
Oh, uncountable numbers of rooms.
Oh.
This hallway went on forever from what you could tell. Even if you were passing through doors, there never seemed to be an end. There's no way you would have found this room as a difference unless one of those creatures had showed you what was happening.
Our little fabric dude showed us this room, though.
And so this fabric monstrosity, by the way, kind of sits in this, goes to sit in the corner by the door that you entered through and sort of collapses into a pile in the corner there and does not seem to be willing to move any further towards those doors, those double doors at the end of the hall.
I'm going to give it the other sock as like a big thank you.
It opens up once again, that burlap mouth, and just, you know, closes it around the sock and just like, and this one, it seems to maybe be full. So it takes its time. So it does that thing like dogs do with a bone where it like just like gnaws on one corner and then it's like, you know, slowly pulling the sock apart into threads and slurping them up like spaghetti.
Oh, so cute.
Oh.
Why doesn't my pile of dirty looking too?
I know, just right?
It's almost like this is a convenient thing for a hoarder to have. Weird.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Midroll. Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you like this sweet ear candy we're providing, please consider leaving us a review. They help us out a bunch, and we love hearing what you think. Now, if this campaign isn't enough for you, then boy, howdy do I have good news. We are soon going to be starting a Rime of the Frost Maiden campaign, run by one of its co-writers, our own Celeste Konowich. Konowich. Our sponsor for this episode is Kobold Press and Tome of Beasts 2, now available on the Kobold Press store. The publisher of the original smash hit Tome of Beasts, Kobold Press, wrangled a new horde of wildly original, often lethal, and highly entertaining 5e-compatible monsters to challenge new players and veterans alike. The Tome of Beasts 2 will bring 400 new monsters to 5th edition, from angelic enforcers, Sasquatch, and shriek bats to psychic vampires, zombie dragons, and so much more. In addition to the Tome of Beasts 2 hardcover volume in PDFs, you can get Monster Pawns, VTT versions, and monster lairs with beautiful maps. This book includes work from DSPN Celeste Konowich and James Intercasso. You can find out more on koboldpress.com and tell them that DSPN sent you. Alrighty, that's all for me. Now you enjoy the rest of the show.
Alright, so these doors, is there any markings or anything on them? Or is it just plain?
No. The only thing that's weird about these doors is that they seem much nicer. Mm-hmm. Than the others. So they're like nice, rich mahogany with kind of bronzed handles. Very different from the bare bones stone that you've been dealing with so far.
Open that shit up.
So you open up the set of double doors, everybody?
Yes.
Hell yes.
Okay. So you open up those doors, and you see that there is a very large chamber beyond. There, again, like everywhere else in here, there aren't any lights. But there is a subtle glow that is coming from something on the far end of this room. So this very large room, you can see, is lined with a bunch of, like, work tables and shelving. Both in the center of the room, you have these work tables. Then all around the outside edges of this room are more of these long tables and stacked shelving that have jars and materials of all sorts. You see tools that are hanging up on pegboards all around the walls here. And then just beyond the work tables, there seems to be a big clear area in the center of this room. And you see kind of set up on blocks is this very, very large marble white thing that you realize as you focus in is shaped like a chess piece. You see that it is this gigantic block of marble that is maybe like 8 feet tall or so that has been carved in the shape of a rook. So you see those, like, crenulated edges up on the top that look like, you know, the edges of a castle wall. And just beyond this clear space and where this piece set up, you see that there are pools in the floor. And by these pools is a very large anvil. And once again, all around the anvil, there are a huge variety of blacksmithing tools, like tinker's tools, all sorts of things. And you see, 7 of these pools. Just in the floor, and that's where the glow is coming from, each of these pools.
I think we gotta forge our way out of here.
As in, finish out this rook?
Maybe, or because, you know, like, at the last place it had a key that we took hold of, so maybe we gotta make a key, or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. If I, like, peer over into the pools, is it just, like, water, or can I, like, see something through it?
So the room is very long, so do you want to walk into the room and kind of get more details, get closer to these pools?
Yeah, but now I'm nervous about it, but sure.
It's a big room. So you walk closer towards these pools. And now that you're on the other side of the work tables, you can kind of see the area that has the chess piece in a little bit more detail. You can see that carved into the floor, or inlaid into the floor, rather, is this silver circle that completely encases the area around the chess piece. So it's maybe like a 20-foot radius, so pretty big, 40 by 40-foot circle here. This room that you're in extends maybe 200 feet back. So you can closer see this circle, and there's nothing else in the circle other than just this big marble block carved like a chess piece in the very center. And you can walk past that to where these pools are. And you see, again, there are, seven in total. And as you look down into them, you see that set to the side, there's this little, like, kind of bucket that has a, like, a soup ladle that's been set beside it. So each one has, like, a clean, nice soup ladle just resting on the side. And each pool, it doesn't look like water. It's sort of a viscous goo, like, material. No, it's odd when you look at it. It is sort of sparkly, though, and seems thick, and in each of the pools has a slightly different color to them. So you can see, like, a tinge of red here, a tinge of green, pink, black, around these seven pools.
Magic detection.
Yes. As you were looking about the room, you see that there is certainly magic in the circle that surrounds the floor here. It does seem to be some kind of protection magic or encasing, the same kind of thing you would use for, like, trapping something inside. Circle of power sort of thing. Just to contain energy or being, things like that. And then as you look at each of these kind of wells, these pools, you see that there is, like, a raw, ferocious amount of magic coming from each of these things. And it's not like a school of magic. It appears to be like raw power sitting in each of these wells. And they're all slightly different, but of the same kind of rawness that you wouldn't be able to discern what exactly is different about each of these things.
Well, that's going to get communicated real quick.
Woo!
What do you guys think about
that? The anvil is also magical. That is next to all of these pools.
How big is the anvil?
I definitely want to go over to the anvil and look at that more.
Check sure. That out. Why don't you go ahead and give me
investigation?
Yeah. And let's give you stone cutting on there. So you want to add like proficiency?
To oh yeah. Sure.
Roll with advantage, maybe.
Both 11s. For a grand total of. Oh, you know what? I'll cast Guidance on myself.
Yay!
Sorry, I left you hanging.
How dare you? So that is a grand total of 17.
Okay. You are looking at this anvil, and it is of the best craftsmanship you have ever seen. You would be honored to smith something on this anvil. That being said, you can recognize some of the components in this anvil. You think maybe mithril, like, was involved, adamantine, like a lot of these extremely rare and powerful metals that you would identify as being particularly resistant to magic. So you feel like you could probably forge magic items on this anvil without destroying it, which is a very rare and interesting thing to find.
Kara is going to take out her smith's tools, and she's going to set them on top of the anvil. And then she is going to take out, like, a piece of charcoal from her bag, and she's gonna, like, smother it on her hands. And, like, feel the gritty grime of, like, the charcoal dust on her skin. And she's gonna say a prayer to Moradin as she, like, beholds this amazing, like, powerful object. And then she's gonna go and she's gonna more closely examine all the different pools of liquid. And she's like, guys, we can make magic shit here.
Should we?
Totally.
Is this Manitios' workshop? Because I don't know if they come back and we're just using their shit, if it's gonna be the best introduction.
Well,
we might have to use this in order to meet her.
She's placed it in this maze. I mean, we need to get out of here somehow, and she fully expected us to collect these chess pieces in order to make our way to them.
Also, I look at Karn, I'm like, you want to give us the Great Courses Plus 101 how to make some shit?
Smithing 101.
Yeah. Da 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 da.
With Kara.
So, Kara, as you look at these pools, the only thing that seems to be different about them is that subtle color that each one seems to have. So, from left to right, the pools are red, blue, green, white, pink, silver, and black. And that's the order of them left to right. So while Kara is running about looking at all of these pools, is anyone else doing anything? It's a pretty big room. Again, there are all of those work tables that seem to have a smattering of objects strewn about them. This is not a pristine workshop by any means. This is clearly something that sees pretty regular use. And maybe whoever keeps it is quite messy, just based on the amount of, like, papers and wood shavings and tools that have been left out, as well as just the racks and racks of different jars and materials and bottles and tools all around the place.
I want to look through the papers and see if any of those notes look remotely like the armor that Rem's wearing.
Oh, okay. Why don't you go ahead and give me an investigation check, I guess, as you're kind of digging through the papers and seeing what's what?
Ooh la la. Ooh la la. 25.
So as you're looking through the papers, you start to rifle through, and immediately you do notice that it is the same handwriting and, like, drawing style on all of these papers. So clearly it is one person who uses this workshop. And it is this very sort of blocky hand, and once again, everything is written in that very archaic sort of style of language. What languages do you speak, Arnadel?
Common, Draconic, Dwarvish, Elvish, Primordial, and Telepathy.
Okay. You would recognize this as, like, a very weird form of Draconic, I think.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, you know that Draconic was one of the first languages ever spoken. Dragons are very old beings, along with a lot of the other sort of beings out there. So it would sort of make sense to you. Draconic is also the language of magic in general, so...
So with the intention of looking for specific schematics, I'm assuming I didn't really find anything, but what I did find was a unified handwriting and that I could identify.
No, that was just the first thing. So as you are looking through, the first thing you notice is that this was one person who was writing in very ancient Draconic. The next thing you notice is that most of what you see here is not the final product on anything. You don't find any, like, books of schematics. You're not finding, like, you know, Da Vinci's diary of, like, good ideas here. What you're seeing is, like, you know, the little scrawled math equations and the rough sketches of somebody who's working on new things that are coming to mind. So you can pretty quickly assess that you're not going to find, like, anything finished in this place. It's some exactly, you know, that's the kind of thing you're finding. But you do see, yeah, a lot of these materials look very old and covered in sawdust, quite honestly. The only section that seems very fresh is on one of the tables that's very close to this circle that contains this chess piece. And you find just, like, a quick jotted note that kind of catches your attention. It's been like cleared away with new tools and kind of laid out here, waiting for somebody to come back, almost like a checklist. And it says, first ignite, quench then mold, blow then balance, give the spark, add the flavor.
First ignite, then quench and mold?
First ignite, quench, then mold, blow, then balance, give the spark, add the flavor. And I just posted that in the Zoom chat.
Dang, I just finished writing it.
I wrote. Sorry, I was typing it and then like trying to.
I wrote the buzzwords.
I should have sent that.
Oh, well, I mean, that's like.
It's very like, clearly it was note to remember that you just see is like sort of been left on this table.
I feel like they're, dare I say, they are instructions.
And Kara, so you have looked at all of these pools, you have assessed these seven colors. What are you up to?
And then, so, she, you said that there was the rook here in this room, right?
Yeah, so it's like this, it's very different from the pieces you've seen so far. This thing stands maybe like 9-10 feet tall and literally looks like a carved statue from a block of marble. And, you know, it has been well carved, but it certainly doesn't animate or activate the way you have seen the rest of these pieces do. There's nothing about this thing that has any semblance of life. So it's quite different from the other pieces you've encountered.
And so looking at the doors that we came in through that led to the teleportation circle, it doesn't look like it could fit through those doors, right?
No. I mean, well, it could if you turned it on its side and you walked it through. Yeah.
Kara is going to say to everyone, if you all said that that teleportation circle also had a reduced on it, if we can get this guy, she points to the rook, into that teleportation circle, maybe it'll make it small.
Hey, hold on, Kara. I found this. I was looking at the notes all over the place, and I think this is important. And I think because you know how all this stuff works, I think this would be better for you to look at.
I will say, too, I think Arnadel and Farrah, you had enough understanding of the reduced quality on the teleport that it looked like whoever came through the teleport from the other side would be reduced. So if you were to put something in this circle, it wouldn't have any effect on size.
It's like an exit only.
So presumably somebody from the other side is very large. And they would come to this circle, and they would get small enough to fit in this space.
Oh my god! Well, wait. Oh! Oh! Ew! I don't like it. Oh.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm gonna hand those notes to you, Kara. Like, do you read Draconic?
No. I mean, you can scroll it out really quickly. It's a piece of paper.
I'll just, hold on. Let me transfer
it's very
real quick
notes.
Yeah, and I hand it over to you, and I'm like, so yeah, like, looks like instructions, right?
By the anvil, was there like a forge or anything, or was it just an anvil?
It's just an anvil, which is sort of weird. So you don't need to melt down anything, it seems like.
I think we have the tools here with these pools of liquid. I assume you share the little riddle with all of us, Arnadel, and just because based on the colors and the buzzwords in that little scribble, I've just assigned meaning to them myself, which is arbitrary until we test it out. I believe we should try to use the red liquid as fire to ignite and melt anything down. Obviously, quench I have assigned to blue. Mold and balance, however, I feel like are kind of interchangeable between green and black because they can both mold.
Yeah, I wrote down black for mold.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think for balance because it's everything.
I think maybe green for balance because nature is
A
very balanced
exactly.
Thing.
Yeah, and I figured black for balance in terms of like there's always dark with the light and that's how you achieve balance, a gray Jedi and so forth, you know?
Would blow be silver for the wind?
I said white for the wind, and I said spark for the silver.
what's flavor?
Pepperonis, which are in a jar over
pink,
here.
Which, just because it's kind of the leftover color, and I had to assign it something.
I don't know. Arnadel, just to throw the devil's advocate here, rather than these things being, just a wild thought, rather than them being assigned to the things that are said in that poem, I feel like those are more instructions that can be applied to any one of these pools.
I feel you.
Right? Like, that's my interpretation of it. I was thinking more of, like, if we had a thing that we wanted to make, we could figure out, I was thinking maybe these pools gave a particular quality and that we didn't have to use all of them.
One thing is that I just feel like it's so convenient that there's 7 steps in the instructions and 7 pools. That feels right.
I have red, blue, black, silver, white, green, pink for my selection.
I think green, the reason I say green for mold is because I think of like earth and like rock is earth and like, I don't know.
That's why I put green for spark, because like the spark of life in like green being life. That was
how interesting how we all interpret these things.
Oh, indeed, how interesting.
Well, we should process of elimination start with what we assume to be true.
Wait, are there, I didn't come across any things in the sketchbook notes that are strewn across the floor.
About more about this specific thing? I don't think so. This was like clearly the only kind of notes you've got. You do find like a reference drawing of what a rook chess piece looks like. That someone must have used when carving this block. You find like measurements and like something you would make before you do a sculpture. Like,
it's just a regular ass marble. 8-foot-tall marble.
Somebody looked like, yeah, that was their intention when they carved this thing.
This person, do you guys think that this person's trying to also get out? Maybe they've been trapped here and they're trying to get out, and they know that that's what they're looking for as well. And since they couldn't find it, they were trying to make their own.
It's totally possible, but either way, this is what Manitios does, isn't it? I mean, making these games and puzzles and traps.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it was for herself or...
I wonder why it's not finished.
Maybe she wasn't expecting visitors.
I guess we'll just do it and see what happens. I really don't want to be wrong if Arnie says that these are just raw pools of power. That kind of terrifies me.
Oh, yeah. This is a big deal.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm terrified.
But they have ladles. They come with their own ladle. They're meant to be accessed.
Let's sit down and have some
soup. No, that's not how magic
works. This is the chili of magic. It's for everybody. Every meal, chili is always appropriate.
No. I speak personally.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong with chili?
The one time as a child, I got food poisoning.
Oh no, explosive.
Or just having a sensitive stomach in general.
Love me some chili. I'm so sorry for all of you.
Yeah, I know. I'm a vegetarian, so I basically live off of chili. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm starving now.
Live with me.
Anyway, Kara is going to, with each of these ladles, she is going to, first she's going to take a ladle full of red sparkle liquid.
Okay. As you do so, you bend down to dip the ladle into this pool, and as you like put it, it is sort of the texture of almost jello, like when you break that like viscous seal on the very top of it, and you see that the liquid itself starts to kind of quiver and move. It has a very like flubber kind of quality as it almost like climbs into the ladle itself. It seems to have some kind of active energy to it as it sits in there and crams itself inside, like it wants to be lifted out and used.
It's consenting.
It wants it. Okay, so yeah. She's gonna lift out this scoop of red.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gonna put it on the anvil.
And as you do so, it, yeah, kind of splooshes on board there, and it moves around. Once again, it's like slime, how it kind of contracts and moves and sort of rolls, sitting, coating the top of this anvil, waiting for something to happen.
And then she's going to go, and she's going to do the same for, next is going to be blue.
Okay. So you go and you get very much the same reaction from blue. So whatever this stuff is, it's very eager to be used. And as you go and like slurp it down onto the anvil, the red stuff retreats very far to the far side of the anvil. And then the blue, as it gets down and it sort of starts to circle each other in a way, it's like watching, you know, amoebas, like, fight each other as they go, and they circle around like yin and yang, almost like sort of shooting tendrils of this goo out at each other, but they pile up and don't seem to want to connect at all as they just keep dancing and chasing each other around the surface of this anvil.
Are the rest of you saying this? This is pretty weird.
It is very weird to watch.
It's a goo fight.
Well, I mean, like, fire and water don't want to mix, right?
I mean, it's the second step. First ignite, quench, then mold.
That doesn't make logical sense to me. We put red goo and blue goo, and they really don't want to interact, and they still don't.
Maybe
see
we need to have. I mean, are they on the anvil by themselves, or are they on top of like a weapon, or do we need to like attach?
They're
them
just
to
on
something?
The anvil by themselves. You haven't tried to put anything down on the anvil.
I will put my short sword down. I have just like a nice solid short sword. I don't really reach for it very much, so why don't I do that? I thought I had a short sword.
I'm sure you do. You have so many. Okay, so your short sword, is it magical? Or is it just a normal short sword?
There it is, yeah. It's just a normal short sword.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and roll me a percentile die?
Oh, 48%.
Okay. So as you kind of, what are you doing exactly with the short sword? You see these two like goo factions are, you know, circling around each other. So where are you, what are you doing with the sword?
I guess I'm gently and slowly trying to place it top down onto the anvil where they're circling.
Okay. And you do, and as you lay the flat of the blade, you know, just against the anvil here, you see both of these energy forces race towards this blade in an instant, and you see that the red manages to be just a little bit quicker than the blue as it jumps into your sword, and you see the blade becomes coated in this, like, pulsing red for a moment, and the blue recoils from it as you see this orange tint now adorns your blade, and blue stays very far away from it now on the far side, but the red jelly has been consumed completely.
Oh my.
What is happening?
Do you pick up your blade?
I'm scared. Should we try a different liquid first?
Okay No, I got it.
Yeah,
you pick do up your red blade. You put red, and then you quench it with blue, and then mold. You want it to be a shiny metal weapon, so it's got to be silver. And then you blow on it with white, and then you balance it with black, and then give it the spark of life with green, and then add pink for flavor. That's my guess.
All right, but the blue ran away. I mean, this jello thing.
The blue is not incorporating into the sword. The blue is very far.
Come on, buddy, quench, quench. There's like,
I'm gonna give you a little detail here, Saye. I think, you know, as you're holding this sword and you see it has been transformed, if you move or shift it in any way, you see this coat of flame lines around your blade. This is now a flaming short sword, so whenever you hit with the sword, you will deal an extra d8 of fire damage. Ooh. Your short sword has become a magical item.
Incredible!
Cool.
Wait, what if it's not that we have to do this with the same thing? Do we, between all of us, do we have 7 items?
I gotta try it.
Daggers. Yeah,
definitely. Yo.
Casters.
I also have a dagger as well.
I have my plain great axe, my two hand axes, and a javelin. So we can definitely.
Okay. So do we want to go ahead and kind of repeat the process and dip a weapon in, put a thing on the anvil, dip a weapon in, and see what happens?
I think so. Yeah. And we're going to go with blue next as just like a singular color.
Sure. Yeah.
Blue is still dancing around on the anvil, and it seems to chill out. The minute you take the short sword off, blue is like cool and like all over the anvil once again. Yeah, you get the sense that it is eager to do the same thing that Red did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carl will throw down her javelin.
Exactly. Yeah. Now that the item has been touched with energy, you feel like none of the other energies are going to work.
Hmm.
All right. Yeah, so we want to dip who's dipping in blue?
Throw down a javelin and dip it in blue.
Okay. As you do so.
I'm going to be honest. I want to call dibs on Spark.
As you dip the blue, you pull away your weapon. Same thing happens. It absorbs into the weapon. This becomes a magical weapon that deals 1d6 cold damage in addition to its normal damage.
I'm kind of curious about the pink.
I know. All the other ones, I'm like, what are they going to do?
I know.
Okay. Somebody want to dip green?
I already said I want to dip for Spark.
Okay. What does that mean to you? Which color does that mean?
Well, silver made sense to me. And I have one dagger.
Try it.
Okay. So as you dip your dagger into the silver fluid, you see the surface of it changes and then subtly glows with almost a holy light. And your dagger deals radiant damage. 1d6 radiant damage.
I kind of look at Farrah and I'm just like,
tight.
I could trade, like, that's not what I was expecting, but now we know. So if you want to trade these, I'll trade these with you.
I'm really curious about the pink. I would like to do the pink on the dagger.
Okay. As you dip the dagger in, you realize pink does necrotic damage.
Ooh.
Ew! I do not like the implications of that.
Not what I was expecting either.
Flesh. Yeah. Pink and silver.
Okay. I mean, to be honest, I'd rather keep necrotic because I don't have as much necrotic damage as I do. I got a lot of radiant, just oozing radiance.
I have like a weird mix of both.
Yeah. I mean, we can trade on the weekends for sure.
I was more thinking of like...
Oh, I mean, whatever works. Like... We'll keep it cash.
How many are left? We did...
You haven't dipped green, white, or black, yeah.
So Kara will dip a hammer into white.
Okay, and as you dip a hammer into white, you see the blade crackles with electric energy as you are going to deal lightning damage.
I look over at you with
lust.
Light in my eyes, like, Kara.
I mean, you all have only dipped weapons. Who even knows what your other stuff would do?
I don't care. It could be a ball peen hammer for, like, making egg cartons.
I lost my shirt, so I'm not sure what else to dip.
Your bra!
To dip.
Well,
woo! Yeah!
Woo! Excuse me, ladies. I gotta try something for a second. Well, you know what? We made a promise. We're gonna keep it. Saya starts unwrapping her chest piece.
Her boob bands.
Yeah. And she will drench it into... I want to go for the black.
Okay. As you dip your chest piece into the black, you see the black slithers over the surface and then, comes into the bandages here. And it seems to shine with multicolored hues, changing rapidly from color to color, almost like oil. Yeah. As you look at it.
Flavor.
So, whenever you wear this, you are going to have damage resistant 10.
Whoa.
And I will roll what it is at the start of every battle.
Oh, okay. Yay. Amazing. So it'll change? Wow.
Dang.
It changes.
So, wait, damage resistant 10, does that mean that, obviously, depending on the damage, it goes to my AC?
So, like, if it was fire and you got hit by a fire attack... and the fire attack did 23 points of damage, you would only take 13 points of damage.
Damn!
Oh my goodness.
That's sick.
Ooh, and now I got a sexy black bra that changes color. It's like holographic. That's amazing.
Yeah. It does. It looks like graphite. Yeah, the bandages change to that like shifting hues, and you can't predict what color it's going to be next. It doesn't seem to follow any kind of pattern. It just sort of shifts.
That's real cool.
At its own will.
Wow.
Kara's going to take off her mithril armor, and she's going to dip it in the green.
Okay.
The breastplate.
Yeah. So as you dip it into green, you see it turns sort of like a muddy brown color for a moment as it shifts and absorbs. And this may not be the best for you, but you have damage resistant 10 to bludgeoning and slashing damage now. As you see, like, the stone of this sort of bulks up. So basically, I'll never be able to hit you again. Bludgeoning or slashing. Or piercing, sorry, as well. It is more like stone than ever before.
This shit's cool. We should dip all of our shit in this shit.
Fuck, dip me, dude.
So did we determine that red is fire, blue is cold, silver radiant, pink necrotic, black balance, green?
I will also remind you that damage types may not be purely representative of what these things are, but this is certainly what it did to your magic items, which is a clue.
Mm-hmm.
But damage types in Dungeons & Dragons aren't necessarily related to what you think they might be.
So, okay. Well, just what we can... This gives us a bit of a more...
Yes. So I will say, like, red
perspective
did fire damage, so you can clearly say that red is fire. But things like blue for being cold,
quenching does not.
Like, water could, you could just safely assume blue means water to deal cold damage, which is like ice and things like that. So if you get my drift.
Black did there. Really feel like mm-hmm. balance to me, the fact that it changed. Yeah, and, yeah.
I definitely mm-hmm. think it's white and then black.
White was...
Oh, it was electricity.
Spark. White was still spark, though, right? That was electricity.
We originally guessed silver was spark, but white was the spark. Because that's what dealt the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I got silver, which yeah. was radiant yeah. damage. Which...
My brain.
What would that be?
Puzzles.
So, mold?
Red, blue...
Green was, like, earth. Yeah. Maybe blow doesn't mean, like, air, but, like... taking a blow.
Right, the bludgeoning, that could have been green.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what do we say when yeah. you, like, yeah. get hit with something, yeah. you take a blow.
Yeah. yeah.
So what, mold?
I was gonna say for the white, no, which one was it that did the, this radiant silver?
Silver.
I'm just gonna guess that's for mold, because it, mold and dead things, and radiant damage does damage to dead things.
Yeah, and I kind of see it as, like, the opposite of necrotic, where if you're molding, you're creating instead of killing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say mold for necrotic.
That one's a little bit... Well, wait, okay, let's... Yeah, I say the double entendre of, like, mold and necrotic, but, like, balance. What do you think
black should be? That's definitely black.
Black is yeah. definitely balance.
Black. Okay. Oh, I wrote that down too. So pink is gonna.
I think pink is mold.
Mold
with okay, necrotic.
Okay, I'm down to agree with that. Yeah, that makes sense. Mold is definitely necrotic. It likes to decompose things.
All right.
So blue quench silver. What did we say silver was? Blow.
Wait, silver is.
We didn't agree.
Oh, what is silver?
On silver yet.
That leaves
flavor.
If you would like to start testing things out, I will say, clearly what you're putting on the anvil is to make magic items. And the statue itself is a little bit further away from this. So if you would like to get the energies to interact somehow with the statue, we can certainly start that process.
Meaning that we now have the keys and we have to put them in the correct order.
Is there, like, anything, like, any spots for us to put them, or are we just gonna, like, lightly graze the statue with them?
There doesn't seem to be any kind of receptacles around the statue. Again, in the big silver inlaid circle, mm-hmm. there's nothing. And then just in the very center is this tall marble statue of a chess piece.
Cool.
I look at Saya because you still have your red short sword, right? Your flamey.
Oh yeah, you all have your magic items now.
Let's just, you want to put that in? I mean,
you want me to hit the marble with it?
It's in a circle, right? You said there's like a ring around it. I think usually the way like from what I'm used to with magic, you just put it in the circle.
Oh, okay. I'll put the sword down into the circle.
Magic loves circles. Okay. It just loves it.
As you pass through the circle, you know, you're reaching your hand down to kind of put the sword inside. You feel a very distinct kind of tingling sensation once you cross over that wall. It's the tingling that indicates that there's some kind of power concealed inside the circle. So you're not stepping from like normal air into a static electric charged field. So you feel that. And as you lay down the sword and kind of retreat your hand back, you see your sword starts to shudder. And you see the golden glow that has come into your weapon now dissipates as just this red goo is kind of tugged out of the circle and pulled almost like a gravitational pull towards this piece. And as the red like slimes up and it moves to encase this chess piece, and you see it ignites into flame and just continues to burn with this magical quality as you look down at your sword that now just appears again to be a normal short sword.
Dang it, I'm gonna walk over to the pool and dip it again.
Sure, you pull back your sword, your normal boring sword.
Yeah.
Are you dipping it into the pool?
Isn't that what everyone was doing with our stuff
before?
No,
we're ladling.
Oh. No, we were ladling liquid it on top of it.
Okay, I'm just dressing it with the with the jello.
I think Kara would probably be able to tell you, "Hi, don't do that." Because it's like yeah. Sticking a full-ass sword into like a bucket of flaming death as opposed to like, you know, putting it nicely.
Okay, understood.
Then
Kara's like, whoa. So you can do that, yeah, and once again, the red graciously moves into your sword, and it can be magic once again. But it seems like whatever you put in the circle just needs the energy.
Uh-huh.
It's not interested in the magic items you're creating.
Yeah.
Kara's going to take a scoop of blue and put it in the circle.
Okay. And as you do, you know, you kind of scoop the jelly substance into the circle, which begins to, like, climb and be pulled the same way the red was. And the red, like, bursts up into flames, like, furiously as the blue begins to move and pool over it. And then it's just this, like, misty cloud that happens as this surface of blue now coats the chess piece. And the red is gone.
Quench. And then mold. Pink!
Did we agree that pink was mold, right?
I think
right?
If pink does necrotic stuff, then yeah, pink.
Let's try it.
I
either pink or white, but we'll find out soon enough.
Pink.
All right.
Pink.
So you go ahead and you drop pink into the mix here, and you see this horrible phenomenon that looks like as the pink goes towards it, the blue, like, launches itself out of the statue, and just like they did before on a smaller scale where they were starting to fight, these two forces run at each other, and there is this spray of pink that happens, almost like a coating of blood around this circle, this invisible barrier, as you see both of these elements have completely dissolved, and when the battlefield is cleared, nothing remains on the statue.
This makes it easier. That's not so bad.
Yes! Now we know what the consequence okay. is.
So.
All right, so then red, then blue.
So red ignite. Okay.
Red, you drop it in, on fire. Blue, you follow in, quenches out the fire. So you have blue left.
White was the bludgeoning, piercing, whatever one, right?
No, one white was the was spark.
Oh, green.
That was green.
Yeah.
I think that green, was green then. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Green wait, no, we decided green was the blow.
But...
So now we have to reconvene. Now we have pink available.
So pink didn't work for mold. So pink either has to be spark or flavor. So the ones that we were unsure about were pink, silver.
I say we try silver first. I feel like silver is more difficult to place than green is, and we should.
Yeah.
Because you would mold.
Silver.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you send Silver into the mix and the same kind of violent explosion happens.
Damn it.
And things are reset.
All right. So then red, blue, green.
Okay. Is that what you're trying? Mm-hmm. All right. So as you send the red in, it ignites into flame. The blue quenches the flame. And then as you send the green in, you see it climbs up onto the blue statue and packed molded earth surrounds the statue now. So you have a complete molded shape of earth that has now quenched or put out the blue.
Then I think white, black, silver, pink.
So red, blue, green, and then white.
Yeah, because then you have blow, then balance. You have white and then black so that they balance each other out.
What did the white do again? I had a mixed up of that.
It was electricity.
Well, I think that's spark.
The spark of life could be related
I do white.
To radiance.
Hmm. Okay.
I would, yeah.
It's, we're going to process yeah. through elimination. We're either going to be right or we're going to wrong. There's no harm in trying.
All right. As you dump white into the mix, a swirling wind starts to fill this space here, and you see the flecks of molded earth begin to shoot off of this thing. And now just a white swirling energy exists inside of this thing. So white seemed to be the correct choice.
Black.
Okay. And as you dump black into the mix, black goes in there and black begins to fight back here. It explodes once again in a clear failure.
Hmm. Mm, wow. Okay. Not black.
Black is not balance.
All right. Red, red, blue, green, white.
It's either pink or silver.
And then, yeah.
And they could both mean balance in my head just in terms of the fact that they're mixed colors.
I think that Nick, death is balance. Death brings balance to
pink.
I would be, yeah.
You repeat the steps, and as you do, you get back to that air swirling result. And as you introduce pink to the mix, everything explodes apart once again in another failure.
Ah, silver. Yeah, that was a really good.
All right, red, blue, green, white, silver.
All right. As you introduce silver into the mix, you see that the winds are quelled as order is established in this place, and a gentle calming breeze moves through. So silver seems to be the order that was needed to quell the elements.
And then we just have black and pink.
Black and pink. And we... I'm also worried that if we try too many times, it's going to block
us
out.
We've tried so many already.
I do black.
Yeah.
Okay. As you dip black into the mix, black and silver, you see, is probably the most violent explosion of all, as these two forces that are diametrically opposed war with each other and then explode.
Goodness. Right.
Red, blue, green, white, silver, pink.
All right.
Black.
Pink.
Black.
As you introduce pink into the mix after following all the other steps you have learned, you see that pink moves towards the statue now into this field of order you have already established, and the marble statue at the center begins to move and shift, and you see limbs start to pop out and develop the same way the other keepers did as it begins to animate, but it's not quite there as you have given it the spark of life.
And then black.
And with black, as you add the flavor, the chaos that makes things what they are, the black crawls into the center of white that begins to spiral and move around the pink of life as this thing begins to move and shift and is now a fully animate creature, like the ones you have seen before, as it rests on its pedestal up above and begins to kind of shift and turn around looking at you all. As it is newly born.
Baby!
Welcome.
Yeah, and you see it. It drops, again, like the others, you know, it kind of creates this mouth shape for itself and is like,
Carl holds out gimme hands and is just like motioning towards the thing, like, gimme, gimme.
Hello!
As it listens to you, it seems like it's just making lots of noises now that it can. And you start to speak to it, and it says, oh, hello. And it kind of climbs off of, you know, its pedestal, sort of stumbling with its, you know, arms that pop out of the sides of it, like investigating what it is and the floor. And it kind of crawls towards you on the ground, not really sure how to stand up yet, if it's safe. And you see that this thing, like, shrinks down to sort of that 5-6 foot, you know, normal human size that its others have been. As it moves towards the edge of the circle and kind of looks at it and then steps over, heading towards you all because you're making grabby hands, so it's very excited by that. So it comes over the circle and is standing by you all.
Oh my god, we're moms.
We did this.
Magical mom.
I reach out and put a hand on it.
Yeah. And as you do so, you know, you grasp hands with it. And the same as what has happened before, you find yourselves transported. And you are standing once again in front of this gate that you entered, seems like only moments before. And in your hand now, you have that very small white rook, which you know is the final piece that you needed. So now all you have to do is head back to the center of the maze and rendezvous with your good friend, Chess.
How dare you say they're a good friend.
And that's where we're going to end the episode! Our good friend! That's where we're going to end the episode. Oh, thank you everybody so much for being here, for solving all my puzzles.
That was good. That was fun.
Yeah? Yeah? Yeah. I hope you all had a good time. So yeah, in the very end, silver radiant damage was order, black damage resistance that shifted around was chaos. So, you know, you had four elements, and then pink was life, of course, and we had silver and black for chaos.
Makes sense.
Thank you all for joining us for this episode of The Venture Maidens, for sticking around, and I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Conowich.
I have been your Moon Elf, Warlock Arnadel Dill by Brittany.
I am Katie, and I played Yanumama Faravalin.
Your new mom.
And I'm Nassim. I played your friendly neighborhood human monk, Cyanur. Telling you that laundry's not so scary.
Nah, it's sweet. It's nice. Just feed it a sod.
And I am Sage, and I have been your crafting cleric and barbarian, Cara Brynhilda.
Yay! Thank you all. If this was your first time here joining us for Venture Maidens, welcome! We are a podcast that publishes new episodes bi-weekly, so every other Sunday you can find this good content, except polished and shorter, on podcast feeds anywhere you can find them. And also, you can follow us on social media to keep up with all the cool things we're doing. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the things, at Venture Maidens. Yes! So check that out, and please, if you do enjoy the show, consider becoming a patron donor. On our Patreon account, we have a bunch of cool things, including all the podcast audio from Sage's show, Rise of Hunger. And then Katie makes coloring book pages that are so great, and I'm about to post the one for October. I love coloring as an adult, so please get in there and enjoy that. We're also coming up soon with our Venture Zine number 2. Also, as a reminder, we are ending the cover contest in just a few days. So if you would like to submit art to be on the cover of the Venture Maiden Zine Edition 2, please just go ahead and email us some submissions. VentureMaidens@gmail.com. Has to be black and white, but there are some more details also on our Twitter page if you want to check that out. Anyway, thank you all so much for being here. And until next time...
Venture Away!
Thank you everyone so much for listening to another episode of Venture Maidens. We have heard a lot about Hero Forge on this show, but I'm even more excited to tell you now that right now there is a Black Friday sale going on. So in case you missed it, Hero Forge is an awesome company that allows you to make fully customizable miniatures for your RPG characters.
Hero Forge is a great website with easy-to-use design tools to let you build your perfect miniature online using a fully 3D in-depth character creator right in your web browser. And right now, through the 19th until November 30th, 2020, they have a Black Friday sale going on. They are currently offering $5 off physical minis with the code EPICLOOT. And right now, it'll be just $3.99 for an STL file in case you want to print out your own miniatures on your 3D printer. No code is needed for that one, but if you do want to get $5 off a physical mini, use that code EPICLOOT. So head on over to heroforge.com, check out all the awesome options they have available, and get yourself something a little special this Black Friday. Again, using that code, EPICLOOT. All right, folks, well, thank you so much, and until next time, venture away.